This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Ukraine calls up reservists as Russian forces pour into the country's east.
People are trying to lead normal lives, but with the news of a potential push past the current front line, people do feel a certain amount of tension.
Plus, President Biden narrows his Supreme Court shortlist, and faced with rising labor costs and supply shortages, American small businesses are falling behind their larger rivals. It's Wednesday, February 23rd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukraine has ordered the mobilization of military reservists as Russian troops pour into Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. President Volodymyr Zelensky also ordered members of newly created territorial defense brigades to begin exercises, though he stopped short of conscripting civilians. Journal reporter Thomas Grove is in Slovyansk, near the front line in eastern Ukraine.
If you go not too far from here, you can hear the sound of shelling almost throughout the entire day. People's houses are increasingly coming under fire, as is civilian infrastructure, including water pipes, gas pipes. Here in Slovyansk, the majority of people hope that they can withstand any potential onslaught from Russian and Russian-backed troops.
Meanwhile, Ukraine's Western allies continue to unveil economic sanctions aimed at Russia, with Japan, Australia, and Canada each announcing a raft of new measures overnight. Russian President Vladimir Putin said this morning that Moscow is, quote, ready to search for diplomatic solutions, but he warned that Russia's interests and the security of its people are an indisputable priority. For continuing coverage of the developments in Ukraine, you can visit our live blog on WSJ.com. President Biden is nearing a final decision on his Supreme Court pick to replace retiring Justice Stephen Breyer and has conducted interviews with three black women for the job in recent days. Sources say those candidates include Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, Judge Juliana Michelle Childs, and Justice Leandra Reed Krueger. The president has promised to nominate a black woman to the nation's high court for the first time. White House officials say Biden remains on target to announce his nominee before next Tuesday's State of the Union address. And the European Commission is today expected to announce a new bill to encourage and regulate commercial and industrial data sharing. It's part of the bloc's bid to be the world's leading tech regulator and would build on existing rules covering personal information. Tech industry groups have been concerned about early leaked drafts of the proposed Data Act, saying it could put discriminatory restraints on a handful of large tech companies and potentially discourage companies from sending their data outside of Europe. This week, President Biden announced plans to improve America's mineral supply chain. We're talking about access to graphite, lithium, and rare earth minerals, demand for which is soaring with each passing year, especially from the EV and solar industries. But how far will these investments actually go? WSJ Markets editor Jim Wilhite is here to help us unpack that and what exactly the White House is announcing. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Luke.
So President Biden has said for a while that he wants the U.S. to have a reliable domestic supply chain. How is he planning to source these increasingly critical minerals?
Well, the longer goal here is to develop a domestic supply chain for minerals. It's been almost entirely outsourced up to now. This comes out of a review near the very start of the Biden administration that was about supply chain issues. But toward that, a step that was mentioned yesterday was a $35 million in federal funding that's going to go to MP Materials Corp. It's for a magnet supply chain and for the processing of rare earth elements.
Right. Explain to us a little bit more about rare earth magnets. What exactly are those used for?
several technologies. Key among them, though, are electric vehicle motors and wind turbines. So it's important to meeting growing demand for electric cars, but also carbon reduction goals generally for the country.
Jim, you mentioned earlier the supply chain for some of these minerals is almost entirely outsourced. So I wonder, how do these investments stack up compared to the challenge the U.S. may face trying to bring this supply chain home?
China has dominated the market for rare earths for sure, to the degree that spending our way out of the problem isn't necessarily a simple matter of throwing money at it. Having been out of the game, there's also the matter of developing the expertise in the complex processes that go into making this stuff. Some in the industry have said it would take billions of investment over decades to become competitive. So a $35 million investment in a company, it's just a start.
And in addition to the cost of trying to get competitive in this space again, I understand some of this mineral mining is pretty controversial. Could you detail some of the environmental challenges at play here as well?
Rare earths are often produced from ore that contains radioactive material. So stricter environmental rules in the West have been a challenge to getting started. And lithium production, which is another commodity that is needed for electric cars, it's raised some controversy over the water usage required, and there's been local opposition to some of the operations.
Right, and water usage is always a controversial issue in the American West. That was Markets editor Jim Wilhite. Jim, thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, from supply chain woes to rising labor costs, American small businesses are struggling to stay competitive with their larger rivals. We'll look at the steps they're taking to survive now and how that sets them up for the future after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Small businesses, the backbone of the U.S. economy, are hurting as a confluence of economic factors squeeze their bottom lines. A tight labor market and unpredictable supply chain disruptions are forcing many to make trade-offs that could further damage their long-term viability and cause them to fall further behind their larger rivals. Journal Economics reporter Gwynne Gilford has been tracking this development for us and joins us now. Hi, Gwynne.
Hi.
Break this down for us. How are American small businesses being uniquely tested at this moment in time?
So we're in a strange economic moment where you have booming demand and rampant supply shortages. And most companies, you know, big and small, are seeing booming sales. So there's an opportunity to grow. But to do that, you have to lock down resources. You have to lock down materials, labor, credit, and small businesses lack the heft and the sophistication needed to compete for those, and they're finding themselves at the back of the line, and they're missing out on this opportunity to grow because they can't get what they need even to produce.
You and your colleague Ruth Simon interviewed a number of small business owners for this piece, and I was hoping you could give us some examples of the business owners you spoke to who are going through this and sort of what their stories tell us.
Yeah, so one company that Ruth spoke with makes plus-size activewear, and they've sold out of their most popular line of black leggings. It's been back-ordered forever, and that's because they just cannot get the material they need out of Taiwan is where it's made. And, you know, a bunch of bigger companies snapped up all the supply. The other thing they're struggling with is their factory shut at some point because of the pandemic. And they've really had a hard time finding other factories that are willing to produce at a smaller scale. So they're having to pay more because they have smaller orders.
I was hoping you could also dive into maybe a business that is experiencing difficulties in hiring right now as well, and sort of what that example tells us.
Labor is a huge one, right? So a lot of small businesses in general, they tend to pay a little bit less on average than bigger companies, but they also have a harder time competing for benefits because at scale, you can provide healthcare fairly cheaply, a lot harder for a smaller company. But a lot of companies, when they're talking small businesses that pay entry-level wages for some of their jobs. They're competing with Amazon, McDonald's, really big mega firms that have raised wages and increased benefits, and job applicants walk away because, you know, they're like, oh, you only pay this? No, sorry, I'm going to go to Amazon or McDonald's or what have you.
Gwen, what are some other ways that larger competitors of these small businesses are able to operate in this very same economic climate, but do so more profitably?
So when you have market power, one way that works is your suppliers want to work with you because your orders are big, right? So the suppliers are prioritizing the bigger firms, and that means it's easier for them to get supply. At the same time, they also probably, they're more sophisticated. So they have contracts that have already sort of worked in clauses that deal with sudden price rises and things like that. And so they're able to push back on higher prices. They're able to lock down the materials they need to produce. Then the other thing is they're able to pass on costs more easily because they are so big and people want to do business with them. Customers are more aware of their brands. So it's just easier to navigate this extraordinary time when you have market power going both ways.
And it sounds like those larger companies are having an easier time accessing credit now, too. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. Small businesses are struggling to get credit. The banks that they have turned to are kind of saying, sorry, we're prioritizing bigger customers right now. It's more advantageous to lend a lot of money to a bigger company maybe than it is to have a small line of credit to a smaller one. It's maybe less risky and the return's likely to be better. So you have that. And on the other side, you have, instead of borrowing to fund growth, a lot of small firms are borrowing to simply to bulk up an inventory and things like that. They're having to take on credit just to cover the costs of inflation, really.
And what about the debt loads that small businesses are carrying now and the amount of money they have in reserve for things like payroll?
So many small businesses are being squeezed, even though revenue is actually pretty good right now for a lot of companies. Their margins are getting incredibly compressed by these higher prices and then also labor. And one kind of startling data point is that 27% of small businesses surveyed by Gusto, which is a payroll and benefits provider, had 1 month of payroll expenses and reserves. That's an increase from 21% a year ago. So you can see it's these pressures are starting to eat into the basic operations of the companies.
Gwen, what kind of changes are small businesses making to stay afloat right now? And could those steps jeopardize their long-term success, even if they're able to scrape by?
So a few of the businesses we talked to are dedicating more manpower to figuring out how to find new sources for materials they need, like chocolate for this wholesale baker we talked to. And instead of having that person do something else to grow the business, that person is instead calling up suppliers being like, can you get me chocolate? And others we talked to are dedicating more staff time to dig into bills and figuring out like, okay, what's this extra fee? Can we push back on it? And that's sapping resources you need, manpower you need to grow the company and to innovate. And over time, that could make these companies less competitive.
That was Journal Economics reporter Gwen Gilford. Thank you so much, Gwen, for bringing us this story.
You bet.
And finally, there's a new gold rush in California for cow manure, that is. Thanks to a lucrative state incentive to make gas from agricultural waste, big companies such as Amazon and Chevron are angling for the smelly stuff. Manure is often left to fester in huge lagoons that emit methane gas into the atmosphere. But as WSJ energy transition and climate reporter Fred Dvorak explains, an influx of capital is creating a win-win situation for oil and gas producers as well as farmers.
If you're a big oil and gas producer and you sell into California, the other big thing is that you're required by California to lower the carbon intensity of your fuels. And so the more of what they're calling negative carbon intensity fuel you produce and sell, the lower your overall fuel portfolio. And so they get double benefits, right? A big gas refiner that sells fuels into California is both going to have to pay less for the dirtiness of their fuel portfolio, to put it another way, and they'll get money from producing these so-called clean fuels.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.